The name of the paper that I'm going to talk about today is Spandex Secure Password Tracking for Android. And this is work that I've done with my students at Duke. Of course, they did all the hard work, so I'm going to try and not botch an explanation of what they've done. So this is a high-level view of the world we live in with mobile devices. You've got a bunch of apps, and they generally want to communicate with services that live in the cloud. And in order to do that, they have to get your login credentials, a username and password. Okay? So you've probably encountered a screen like this at some point in the last X years after installing an app. These are first-party apps that require login credentials, but third-party apps also require login credentials using OAuth protocol and things like that. So if you type in your username and password to one of these apps, you might be wondering, you know, where are my passwords going? And should I be worried that they're going someplace I don't want them to? So unfortunately, there have been some phishing apps spotted in the wild. Here's a Netflix app that was discovered by the Malware Genome Project guys at NC State. It's a fake Netflix app. And rather than sending your username and password to Netflix, it sends it to this super sketchy URL. Other examples are banking apps. So there's the Roba malware in Korea that tries to steal your banking credentials. There's SV Peng, which is Russian malware that also tries to steal your banking credentials. And so for us, when we were posed with this problem, the obvious solution to us was just, let's use taint tracking, because that's the kind of thing that we do. Okay, so I'm going to give a high-level overview now of the approach we're trying to take. Okay, so the first thing that you have to do is you have to actually tag passwords as they're entered. And so we developed a system called ScreenPatch that was presented at Mobisys last year, which provides a spoof-resistant UI for entering passwords. Once you've actually entered the password, you then use taint tracking to figure out where that data goes as the application executes. And here we could use something like Taintroid, which we collaborated on with Will Lenk and Jay Un and a couple of other people for our OSDI paper. Excuse me? Sorry, I heard somebody. And then you inspect the output of the app and check the tags to see if they're tainted or not. OK, so this talk is really going to be about taint tracking. So I want to give some basics of taint tracking right now. OK, so the basic idea is that every variable in the program is going to have a label or tag associated with it. And those labels reflect the data dependencies. Does this variable contain secret information or not? In addition, you have a taint propagation logic so that when you encounter a particular operation, you know how to transfer taint from the input variables to the output variables. OK, so very simply, when you get a sensitive input, you set the taint for the input variable. Then when you want to do something with it, you allow your taint propagation logic to transfer taint from the tags of the input variables to the output variables. And so this is basically all that Taintroid does. These are called explicit flows, okay, where taint propagates directly from the input variables to the output variables. Unfortunately, information can flow in other ways within a program, including through the control flow like this. Okay? So in this case, if I then branch on this tainted variable, S's value is influenced by the taint. It contains some amount of sensitive information. Okay? And this is called an implicit flow, where information, sensitive information is transferred to a variable through the control flow. And that's what this talk is really going to be about, handling implicit flows. Okay, so first I want to say that tracking implicit flows is really, really, really hard. Okay? And let me explain why it's hard. Okay, so the obvious way to handle this, or the common way to handle implicit flows, is to taint the program counter when you encounter a tainted conditional branch. Okay, so here we have our tainted variable S. When we get to S, we realize that the condition is tainted, so we then transfer the taint from the condition to the program counter. And then when we update a variable, we not only transfer the taint from the input variables, but also from the program counter, which taints X. Once we exit the scope of that condition, we put the taint for the program counter back to the way it was. And then we're going to output X and B. because we've tainted the program counter, we know that X contains secret information. Unfortunately, we also have to perform this kind of analysis on the untaken path as well, because if you'll notice, Y contains just as much secret information as X, even though we didn't take that path. Okay, so this requires very conservative static analysis of code you don't actually execute. All right, so that's what makes this hard. And the big problem here is over-tainting, okay? So here's a simple snippet of code. What you have is a condition that doesn't reveal very much secret information. Okay, so if I have a secret variable and the attacker learns whether it's equal to zero or not, that's not the same thing as learning the entirety of the secret, but because generally I have a single bit to represent whether or not my variable has been influenced by the secret at all, I have to set that one bit. Okay? So I've got just a little bit of secret information, and then I'm going to apply taint to all of the objects that are updated within that code block. So what I have then is not much information being transferred to a large number of objects. And what we've observed is that the over-tainting problem does arise when you're trying to taint track passwords. Okay, so we did a simple study with four apps. We have Taintroid on left. Remember, that's just explicit flows. We also created a variant of Taintroid where we actually propagate taint to the program counter in the way that I described before. On the x-axis, we have the number of tainted outputs for when we ran these apps, logged in, just did some basic exercise, basic functionality. And what you'll notice is that once we start tagging the PC, everything looks like it's tainted. Okay, so we have file writes that look like they're tainted when they weren't before. We have network traffic over an unencrypted channel that looks like it's tainted even though it wasn't before, and so forth. And you might think, okay, well, if I have all this communication with servers I trust, then maybe it's not a big deal. But it's actually worse than that. So we see that some of these false positives are to different domains. So for example, if you ran Taintroid++, you might be tricked into thinking that you're sending your password to a CDN or to an ad network when we're pretty sure that's not really what's going on. Okay. So I'm going to return to, again, this sort of simple example and go through our key observation for this work. So what this example shows is that at most, when I take this branch, or even if I don't take this branch, all I've learned is whether the secret is zero or not. Okay? So if I'm okay with revealing whether my secret is zero or not, if that's a safe amount of information to reveal, then I shouldn't go and update the tags for any of the variables inside of this code block. I should just leave them alone. I revealed some information, but it's a safe amount of information. Okay? So that's sort of the key approach to the system Spandex. Okay, so Spandex is a way of tracking implicit flows within the Dalvik virtual machine, and it's able to compute a useful upper bound on the amount of information that you are potentially leaking through implicit flows. Okay, and then it's up to the policy makers to decide whether or not that amount is safe or not. Okay, so we're leveraging some very key properties of passwords here. I don't think the approach that I'm going to talk about can be applied to just any data type. Okay, so passwords are short strings. It's not a lot of data. They're never displayed on the screen, so you don't have to worry about implicit flows through the user interface. That's just a painful mess, which we learned. Also, there's a very limited amount of local processing on the password. When we first started this, we just assumed that there would be no processing, okay, that an app would just take the password and then forward it to the server. It turns out they do some processing. They do some sanity checks, but it's very, very limited. Okay, so here's an overview of what we're actually doing. And the main thing here is we're maintaining a data structure called a possibility set for every single secret input. And this, in our case, this means every character in the password. So a possibility set is just a set of values that an attacker could learn about a set of possible values for a secret that an attacker might infer from observing the control flow. Okay, so let me make that a little bit more concrete. For each password character, this basically means, at the beginning, is this an ASCII character or not? Is it value 32 to 126? Okay. Number two, as the app executes, what we're going to do is record all of the ways that taint is propagated by the program. Okay? And we're going to use that because when we hit a conditional branch that's tainted, we're going to use this record of all the operations to then go back and figure out which possible values of the secret could have led to the particular execution path that we've observed. So if you're familiar with symbolic execution, this is exactly what's going on. Okay? All right. And then at the end of all this, our guarantee is that if an app outputs something that's untainted, the maximum amount of information that that output could leak through implicit flows is reflected in the possibility set, in this P set. Okay, so let me go through a high-level example. All right, so let's say I have some password, and I've got a character in the password C that is an uppercase P. Okay, so what I'm going to do, I'm going to initialize the P set for that character. It's going to be 95. It's all possible ASCII values. At some point, the app is going to branch and check to see whether or not the password is uppercase or lowercase. Okay, at that point, I can narrow the P set for the character to 26 values, all of the uppercase letters. So at this point, I know that my implicit flows have revealed to the attacker that, okay, this is an uppercase letter. I'm then going to convert this, or the app is then going to convert this to a lowercase letter by adding 32. Okay, at that point, it's going to check whether or not the lowercase value is a lowercase p. But because I've been able to record all of the operations on tainted data as well as update my p-sets, I immediately know, oh wait, if I allow them to take this branch, then they have narrowed down the possible values for my character to uppercase p, which is the only thing that it could possibly be. Okay. All right, so I'm actually going to skip through this. There's some lower level details in here, what our operation DAG looks like, where we're recording operations on tainted data. This code on the left is Dalvik bytecode. There's some information in this slide about how we maintain labels. A lot of this, all of this is in the paper, so I think I'm going to skip through this in the interest of time. You can certainly ask me about it later. Again, if you know symbolic execution, then that's all that's going on. Okay, so there are a number of other considerations, which I think is what make this work pretty interesting. So the one is that when I hit one of these conditional branches that's tainted, what I effectively have to do is solve a constraint satisfaction problem to figure out which inputs could have led to a particular execution path. Okay? These CSPs may be really hard to solve. They may be impossible to solve. Okay? So they may involve multiple characters. I may be mixing up information from characters. They may involve operations that are complex, like indexing into arrays, or using bitwise operations. And it turns out that we do see these in practice. In particular, we see them in crypto libraries and string encoding libraries. So for example, you take a password and then you want to put it into a string and send it out as an HTTP request. Okay, so our solution here is to define a set of trusted runtime libraries that can perform these kinds of operations. Okay, this is really nice on Android because they already provide these in the platform, so we just make these trusted. And when I say we make them trusted, what I really mean is that we're not going to do any CSP solving internal to those libraries. Okay, so we have our trusted crypto library, and if you use it, it's fine. We just make sure that all of the outputs are tainted. We essentially convert those to explicit flows. Okay, it also means that complex operations inside of untrusted code are just banned. You can't index into an array using tainted data in untrusted code. There are more details in the paper. But what I want to point out is that there's something really cool going on here, which is that we're constraining how apps can operate on secret data. So for example, an app cannot use its own implementation of crypto here. It will be forced to solve an intractable constraint satisfaction problem and die. Okay. So this is a kind of interesting enforcement mechanism. We're not quite sure how else it's applicable, but it seems like it's potentially cool. Okay, so when we were evaluating Spandex, we basically wanted answers to the following three questions. What's the runtime overhead? What kind of p-sets do we observe in real apps? And how well does Spandex actually protect passwords? So the first answers to the first two are in the paper, and I'm going to focus on the third. So for the third, we need an attacker model. So let me briefly explain our attacker model. We have a malicious app that runs on the phone. That attacker also has a database of plaintext passwords living on its server. The malicious app can communicate a few things to its remote server. It can communicate the username. We don't protect the username. It can communicate the pset of each character in the password. And it can communicate the password's length. Okay. We assume that the target's password is in the database, which basically makes this a de-anonymization problem. Okay? We're going to take the information that we can send out from the app to the server and then try to figure out which password in the database is the user who's running the app. Okay. So for every letter in the password, we are going to assume the attacker learns whether it's uppercase, lowercase, numeric, or special. And this is based on what we've observed from real apps, how they branch on password data. Okay, so then we want to know, well, how many guesses would an attacker need given this information to de-anonymize the user from their plaintext database? All right, so we used a data set of 130 million unique passwords. This was collected not by us, but by other people from a variety of well-known sources, including, I think, the Sony database leak, password leak, and the Gawker password leak. And then for each password in this database, we're going to generate a rule that describes each character in that password's type. Okay, then we're going to compute something called a match set, which is a set of passwords that match that password's length and character sequence of character types. You can think of this as a regular expression. Okay, so if my password is 1234, the regular expression is number, number, number. How many other passwords in the database are also number, number, number? Count that number of passwords, and then that's the possible guesses an attacker could use to de-anonymize the mobile app user. Okay, so we call that the match set. Here's a CDF of match sets from our data set. Along the x-axis, we have the number of matches. Along the y-axis, we have percentage of passwords. We found that 96% of the passwords in our data set, given the particular rules, would have a match set of over 1,000. 99% of passwords in our data set would have a match set of greater than 100. Okay, so there's an interesting implication for our attacker model, which is that longer passwords are bad because they're very unique. Not many people use long passwords. But I think that's more just an artifact of our attacker model than anything else. Okay, so you also have to worry about the usage distribution of passwords. So it's one thing to say that all passwords are equally likely, but people have observed that they actually follow a more zip-like distribution. Okay, so if you assume they're uniform, this is what the curve like looks like, over 10% or over 10 tries for 99% of passwords. Let me skip to the zip-like distribution. Some zip-like distributions are bad. Like these have been observed in the wild. So for these, 90% of passwords could be guessed in less than 50 tries. For another data set, 80% of passwords could be guessed in fewer than 50 tries. Some zip-like distributions that people have observed are fine, or better, anyway. So for Hotmail, it would require over 10 tries for 99% of passwords, over 100 tries for 85% of passwords. There are more details on this in the paper. There's a lot of related work. I think the piece of related work that I really want to point out here is the DTA++ paper from 2011. They have a lot of the same insights as we had about the sources of overtainting. They also apply techniques from symbolic execution. We do it at runtime and sort of focus on the actual data type. I think those are the main differences. Okay, so to wrap up, briefly, Spandex uses pSets to provide this upper bound on the amount of information you're leaking through implicit flows. We think it's useful under very specific questions, but conditions, but we've by no means solved implicit flows. I don't think that's ever going to be solved. And then I want to wrap up by saying I think this work could go in a number of directions. One is looking at different data types, credit card numbers, social security numbers. And I think the property of the runtime using CSPs, constraint satisfaction problems, to limit what an app can do or a code can do with secret data is potentially really interesting. So with that, I'll take questions.
Great. Well, let's thank Brendan. And time for some questions, both on that mic and also.
Jeffrey Goldberg again from, well, Steal at Agile Bits. First, just one quick thing is that when you look at password distributions carefully, they don't actually follow a power law.
Distribution.
Matthew Weir and David Malone have a couple papers on that. I'll try to get you resources.
Yeah.
And I've done my own analysis of the Adobe database.
Okay, so that's different than what we found in the papers in our literature search, but I'd be happy to find counterexamples.
Okay, I'll be happy to send you that. In all of your taint tracking, you're assuming that the password is eventually sent off someplace. If a password is used entirely locally, let's say for decryption, then I expect you'll find that the entire program's operation will depend on every bit of the original password. So is this kind of analysis just limited for passwords used for authentication instead of encryption?
My guess is yes. So we looked at 50 apps, and they didn't seem to behave the way that you're describing, which doesn't mean that it could never happen. But in the 50 popular apps we looked at, we didn't see that.
Thank you.
Hi, Joseph Bonneau from Princeton. I was curious it seemed like you jumped, maybe I missed something, but you jumped right from a uniform distribution to a zip distribution.
Right.
Why didn't you use the empirical distribution based on frequency in the leaks that you had?
At least for the
common passwords where you have good statistical support for it.
Right. So the zip distributions that I used were from the literature. So we didn't just make those up. Uniform was just sort of naive version. I'd be happy to plug in other distributions that people have observed. Our database was all unique passwords, so we had no usage distribution. Maybe that was the thing that I wasn't clear about.
I see, okay.
Yeah, it was totally unique passwords.
Right. For Rocky, you can definitely get the frequencies.
Great. Well, let's thank Landon again.
Thanks.